Is this more than money? Is this more than hockey? Do you think Montreal is... I made the comparison to where Boston was at with Phil Kessel in the summer of 09, and there's different value, but there's something here. Do they not like this player as much as we all think they should? Because it's kind of inexplicable that they just don't do what the other 29 teams seem to do and sign their best players.
Well, I think he's a tricky guy to sign, and I think they're a team that really believes, and probably intelligently, that if you don't, that you have to manage your cap situation the best possible way, and if that means you have to ruffle a few feathers along the way, so be it. I just don't think P.K. Subban's a guy who's going to get upset because somebody says this. He's had people criticizing his game since he was 15 years old. So if he goes in there and Mark Bergevin says, well, we don't like his plus-minus or his penalty killing, you know, when he's on the ice and throws a bunch of stats. All that said, I don't think Montreal's going to do that. To me, it makes sense that they'll settle beforehand. The trick is with Subban is you've got P.K. Subban, the hockey player, and you've got P.K. Subban, the personality. What do you pay for the personality? What do you pay for the fact that he is, with Carey Price, the face of that franchise, and an ambassador for the game, and a unique individual in Canadian hockey right now? You know, do you pay extra? Do you pay a premium for that? And do you pay a premium because he's your guy? You know, those are all tough questions. The funny thing is, when I saw them go in at 8.5 and the Canadiens at 5.2, I think 8.5 is low. I really do.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
I think if Shea Weber's making whatever goofy number he is, that's P.K. Subban to me.
That's what I thought he'd settle on. Like, I thought he'd settle around 7.5, 8, 8.25, and that's what they'd agree upon. That's him shooting for the stars, and he's probably low.
Now they can settle before that and go up to 9 or whatever. It was interesting, the quotes there from Donnie Meehan, who's as savvy as anybody when it comes to reading the market. And maybe in this case, another short-term deal is the one that makes sense. He gets paid, and I remember being struck by this. He was working for us during the lockout, and I said to him, because guys like Taylor Hall and Tyler Seguin had all signed these contracts before they went into the lockout, and I said, do you feel like you might have, you know, lost a bit of money? And he looked at me like I had three heads. He is so supremely confident in not only his ability as a hockey player, but his ability to get value for what he does. It wouldn't even cross his mind. If they gave him 1 year at $10 million, I don't know if that's his choice. I'm sure he could live with that, and he'll just play.
Yeah, and betting on yourself, right? I don't think enough athletes bet on themselves. Or is this whole thing with Montreal now, is it just we're treating Subban like he is Ryan Suter heading into unrestricted free agency? Is this the whole classic dispute of, like, listen, you're going to hit your $1 trillion payday in a few years, but as of now, you are an RFA, and we're still talking RFA comparables.
Yeah, and if you don't control the numbers on your RFAs, then you get into trouble in the salary cap. And I think, for example, the Leafs did a pretty good job of that with Jake Gardner. Now we'll see how that works out long term. And I'm not comparing Gardner to Subban, but you do have to use the hammer when you've got it. Baseball, it seems to me, does a better job of that. You get paid when it's time to get paid, and until then, you don't get paid. The hockey system has long been this way, that teams, for whatever the, you know, the believed threat of an offer sheet, or the belief that, well, we don't want this guy to be mad at us or whatever. Well, you know, it's the Canadiens and Subban have gone past that point. You know, that was when they did their last deal, and then he said, fine, I'll show you. Well, he did show him. And now they're going to have to step up with some kind of number, and I think the question is, does he get the number and the term, or does he just get the number? Because I don't see him just going for term and a low number. I don't think any of us see that.
Damian Cox, Sportsnet's own, joining us. We'll touch on Rogers Cup in just a sec. Let me ask you quick about the Leafs. Daniel Winnick in. Lots of names have been in the last. They have a lot of forwards. Do you still smell something bigger coming with this team? More of a player shakeup than we have right now? Or are they going to bring in 15 forwards with NHL experience and say, go at it, guys, there's 12 spots?
Yeah, I don't see a bigger thing coming.
No.
I really see... I remember I had a long chat with Brendan Shanahan in Philadelphia at the draft, and you know, he was still trying to figure out, and this was before he made moves in the executive suite and the things that have happened there, but his belief was they needed to get tougher, meaner, harder to play against on the third and fourth lines. And that on its own would make them a better team because they would be less likely to collapse like they did last year. Now, whether these guys, the Winnicks and the people like that, are going to be, you know, difference makers, no. But, you know, if they're more solid there, I we can go back and forth about this team, and it's a longer conversation than this, but you have to, I think, take a broader view. Where were they at the end of two seasons ago? Where were they now? Where are you going now that you've added some more, you know, prospects like Nylander and guys like that? And what do you need to stay competitive? People sometimes forget they were in first in the conference. After that L.A. win in L.A., the debate was, well, are they going to get home ice? And then the bottom fell out. So do you overreact to that or react properly? It seems to me Shanahan and his directions or his decisions along with Dave Nonis has been, let's not overreact. Let's reinforce in the lower parts of our lineup and see what that does for us.
So SportsSense 1's got City open coverage at 4 o'clock. Milos Raonic will play Leighton Hewitt today in a round of 16 there. The warm-up to the Rogers Cup next week. We've got great coverage all next week with both Toronto and Montreal's venues. Just your reaction to Nadal coming out. It's not great for the tournament, but it certainly opens up. Maybe even for a Andy Murray being a 9 seed, it opens it up for a lot of guys, maybe Milos Raonic among them next week.
You know, it's funny, there's two guys that I'm always disappointed when they're not able to play anywhere, and that's Rafael Nadal and Roger Federer, because they're so unique in their own ways. And Federer's at a certain point in their careers, and I urge you guys to get out there next week, because who knows when we'll see him again live, right? I mean, who knows we're going to get that opportunity. He wasn't in Toronto the last time he was here. He is here this time. He's going to be almost 35 by the time it rolls around to Toronto. I'd go see him if I were you. Rafael Nadal is such a unique player. And, you know, maybe if not for all the injuries, who knows how many Grand Slam titles we have. But it's still a good tournament because there's depth. And, you know, watching Milos defeat Jack Sock last night, I think he could win this tournament. He very much could win this tournament. And we've never, ever gone into certainly a men's Rogers Cup and saying, or a Canadian Open or Des Maurier, whatever it's called, saying a Canadian guy is one of the favorites to win it. And he is this year.